Feeney.
I'm Clancy.
And I'm Damien.
And you might be asking, what do two Aussies and a Pom have in common?
Quite a lot, actually.
For starters, Her Majesty has her face on all our currencies.
Even the coins.
There's a great Union Jack floating around some flags as well.
And we speak the same language, sort of.
Somehow.
Allegedly.
And we love winding each other up.
What are we doing here, then?
Winding you up. But anyway, on this show, we discuss current Australian politics.
We take a look at past events.
While on a mission to ensure the Governor-General stays in their job.
What? I didn't sign up for this. What?
It's in the show's name, Phoebe. Welcome to Let's Save the Governor-General.
No, I don't want to. Kick him out.
What about her?
Or her. No, let's just not have a Governor General. Let's have a republic.
With who is president?
Not ScoMo.
President ScoMo. President ScoMo.
No, President Julia Gillard.
President Craig Kelly. Good evening. Hello. Welcome to this lovely post-Easter, post-WrestleMania Night 1, post-Tasmania election episode of Let's Save the Governor General.
It is also the post-Australian National Brass Band.
Oh, how brassed off were you, Clancy?
Oh, my golly gosh, I was stuffed.
Actually, Clancy, you got to tell me, you survived a day in church.
I did. I survived a whole day in a real church.
You didn't burst into flames.
I did not burst into flames, no. I was running the room for the solos for the woodwind instruments as part of the competition.
And how much woodwinding was there and how good was it?
There was a lot and most of it was pretty good. I did actually enjoy it. There was a bit of controversy, which I can't go into because of rules.
Did Taylor Auerbach offer you $200,000 to not discuss it or something? Or
No. It's just because it's part of the National Bands competition. So
yes. No, that's fine.
And, I was an official.
Well, you keep your secrets, Clancy. Phoebe, what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere?
In the Northern Hemisphere, it's still snowing here.
It looks dark as all hell where you are.
Well, it is because it's, 6:10 in the morning.
Yeah. You're very brave, Phoebe. That's all I can say.
So
brave and stunning. That's our Phoebes.
I think Matt Stone and Trey Parker would be pleased with that reference that you just made there.
Indeed. Well, look, barely a week goes by in Australia where something weird just, like, we just keep on keeping on is the old saying.
Weird.
Because, and I think the biggest news story is what I said is the gift that keeps on giving is the Bruce Lerman trial. Before I get into what's happened this week, I'm going to say that it is going to keep on giving because when the defamation
it's
trial
Bruce
judgment...
It's Bruce Lerman comes, for crying what, out loud. He's the gift that keeps on giving.
What I was going to say was that after this particular defamation trial judgment comes, there's potential appeals. Then Brucey has another trial in Toowoomba. Then there is another defamation case with Maurice Payne against Brittany Higgins and David Shiraz as well on her side. It is going to keep on going.
I had somebody on social media complain that I commented on a news story from outside of North America.
Oh, and no, how dare you?
And I turned around to this person and went, ignorance of world events would mean that my life was nowhere near as fun. Bruce Lerman is one of those things that makes life a little bit funnier.
Indeed. So if I can summarize the last week of events, basically Justice Michael Lee was about to hand down his verdict in the Bruce Lerman defamation trial against Channel 10 and Lisa Wilkinson. Channel 10 successfully applied to reopen the trial to allow testimony from a former Channel 7 producer named Taylor Auerbach, who was instrumental in helping secure the rights to the Bruce Lerman post-trial interview. And it's alleged that Channel 7 paid for drugs and hookers, is the short way of putting it. So let's see
what... drugs and hookers. Drugs, hookers, parties, and a luxury apartment.
Steak, luxury apartment, and a round of golf in Tasmania. Let's see what A Current Affair have to say.
Defamation trial. On the stand today, more shocking claims from a cocaine bender to hiring prostitutes, all allegedly in a day's work.
Afternoon, Taylor. Can you tell us what's your beef with Bruce at the moment? The man of the hour, Taylor Auerbach.
What are you hoping comes out of these claims, Taylor?
An unemployed TV producer, now the headline act. His explosive claims stopping a federal court judge in his tracks.
Do you stand by these claims, Taylor? I mean, they're pretty wild allegations, aren't they?
Auerbach's 11th hour evidence delaying the much anticipated ruling in the Bruce Lehrman defamation trial.
Yeah, so the fact that he is testifying late, and some of the back and forth between Bruce Lehrman's barrister and Mr. Auerbach has actually come out in public as well. And the defense run by Bruce Lehrman's lawyers is that Taylor Auerbach is trying to get back at his former boss, Steve Jackson, who became the head of media for New South Wales Police until his contract was torn up, because pictures of Steve Jackson with a naked woman on a couch had been released.
What I would say is that Vince McMahon would be proud of writing this storyline. He would have been proud to have this on the USA Network, on UPN. He would have been proud of it. Even Vince McMahon would not have gone this far. Here's my take on it. Yes, the allegations are lurid. Yes, the allegations are wild. But they have a ring of truth about them.
Ah, yes. Well, I suppose the question is how far, like, a ring of truth as compared to completely and factually accurate is the...
It's the Bruce Lehrman circus of truth.
Yeah, indeed. Yes.
It's Bruce in his song, he fought the law of Bruce One.
And the Bruce One. That'll never get old. But it does highlight, I suppose, firstly, checkbook journalism. But also some of the chatter around has been about like what sort of cowboy operation that Channel 7, the Spotlight TV show, was running. And a lot of the chatter has been that it's like going back to the 80s with, you know, alcohol-fueled people sleeping at their desks, win at any cost kind of mentality that would be the subject of many workplace harassment allegations.
All I would say is Gordon Gekko's got nothing on Channel 7.
No, exactly. But what I found interesting was this. So on March the 28th, in the Fairfax Media, Bruce Lehrman hit with legal threat from X7 producer over Matthew's denial. So I find it interesting that a guy is suing another guy for defamation who said that he didn't pay for prostitutes and cocaine and a top level restaurant meal on the Channel 7. One liar against another liar.
I'm going to say this. I'll be criticized for what I'm about to say, but I don't care. This is lad culture gone mad.
Actually, I would actually agree with you there. Yes.
This is toxic masculinity at its worst. When people complain about lad culture and toxic masculinity, it's not people being woke and complaining about men being men. It's these idiots.
You do. Clancy, you were about to say something before we cut you off, but yeah, have your say, Clance.
Basically, I was having a chat to Adrian about this the other day, and I mean, he's really shown himself up, though. You know,
Adrian or Bruce?
Bruce. I love the way that all of the news services, when they're talking about the case, go that, you know, basically they're very careful to say that no charges, he wasn't convicted of anything. It just basically goes, well, we all know he did it. We just can't actually prosecute him for it.
Yeah.
And this is not helping his case at all.
No.
And that's the way it goes. It's like, well, he's just going to have to basically suck it up, or he will get more charges brought against him.
In Toowoomba in Queensland, I think in June is when that trial is meant to start. So he already has more charges against him.
I think it's one of those cases of he's just digging his own grave, isn't he? He's just digging it deeper. It's just a matter of time when he's going to be tossed into it.
Mr. Taylor Auerbach also told the federal court how he built a rapport with Lehrman over several months in order to secure an exclusive interview, claiming that Lehrman appreciated the fact that I wasn't sitting with the rest of the feminazis in the press pack.
You see, it's language like that that doesn't really endear these two people to wider society. When you start invoking, you know, Nazi imagery, as we saw when a British protester, came over and started protesting, and then actual Nazis marched up the state house court set. People didn't like that. So invoking Nazi terminology to refer to other people doesn't go down too well.
Matthew Richardson, SC for Lerman, argued in closing submissions that it was implausible that the two nights of prostitutes and illicit drugs were covered by a $750 entry for pre-production expenses. That was two
I'll tell
nights.
You why. I'll tell you why.
Why?
That's not enough money.
No, exactly. So, that was two nights with him and Mr. Albach with the drugs and the prostitutes. Even the least worldly person in this room, which regrettably is probably me, Your Honor, would know that that is a stretch. Well, what I find amazing is that Mr. Albach then apparently he woke up the next morning in remorse and offered his resignation. And instead of being fired, Mr. Albach then claims that Channel 7 promoted him and gave him a pay rise.
Now, here's the thing that gets me. Channel 7 aren't denying any of this.
Oh, well, of course, yes, they would deny because it's their boy who they let go. And so there is a line of defense that Mr. Albach is being vindictive against his former employer. Because I think about a year after he secured the interview, they left on bad terms. And so there is a slant on this that could be seen as Taylor Auerbach is aligning with Channel 10 to get back at Channel 7.
It does, though, sound like the Formula One scandal over the inaugural Singapore Grand Prix. Everybody turned around and said that Nelson Piquet Jr. was, you know, a sour, you know, vindictive man who was just trying to get back at his bosses at Renault. Turned out everything he said was true.
Yes. Look, all we can do is hope that the judgment comes and that any appeals are expedited or rejected fairly quickly because, yeah, this is going to go on for quite a while. But look, a good antidote to all that is Scott Morrison's new book, Plans for Your Good, A Prime Minister's Testimony of God's Faithfulness by Scott Morrison, 30th Prime Minister of Australia. Will either of you two be rushing to read that?
It sounds like it's probably something I should read just so I can have more material to throw at him.
A special foreword included in the book will be written by former US President Donald Trump running mate and Vice President Mike Pence.
Now, here's the real question. What's the MSRP?
Jeez, it'd be like $30, but then after a year, it'll be like $5 in the discount bin at Big W. You know,
it's like I'll always remember. I own a copy of Dick Cheney's memoirs and George Bush's memoirs. I got them at a car boot sale, £1 for both of them.
Oh, jeez. Okay, Clancy, what weird political memoirs do you have?
What weird political memoirs do I
have? Yeah, which kind of like offbeat political memoirs do you have that we'd be surprised that you have?
I can imagine you having like someone like Bronwyn Bishop's memoirs.
Oh god!
Well, I'm just actually looking at my bookcase because I do have some memoirs. I'm just not sure who they're by.
Okay, keep talking. I'm going to bring mine out. So keep talking, ladies.
I do have memoirs from my Uncle Paddy. Somewhere.
Do you have anything by Parnell?
No, I don't. Paddy had quite an extensive library which he donated. I think that's in the State Library of New South Wales now. But I do have some. Just trying to find them. I don't know what I've done with them. There's a few interesting ones there though. But yeah, I've got Paddy's.
I'll tell you one of the best political memoirs I ever read. I think this was who it was by. Was by Jesse Ventura. If you know that name.
No,
because
sorry.
He was a pro wrestler turned US politician.
Oh, okay. I always actually did want to read the memoir by Shirley Temple. I thought that would be quite interesting.
Okay. I cannot find it anywhere for the life of me, but I have Untamed and Unashamed by Pauline Hanson.
Oh my golly gosh.
Yeah, it's an interesting read. She comes across as a very genuine person. Whether you agree or disagree with her, you know where she stands, and I'll give her that much. You're not going to die wondering what she thinks about certain things.
No, of course not.
I do have Jermaine Greer's. I mean, she's a controversial figure. The part of the reason why I have that is it's actually a quote by my mother in her biography. Yes.
Mother is in that book.
Yes.
Well, my mother knew her. So, because she was a member of the Push in Sydney, which is a bit of an interesting underground movement.
And you'd know this if you attended Clancy's birthday piss up party. Yes. I meant throat party. That's slip of the
that's
tongue there.
That's correct. Yeah. So there's actually a quote from my mother in there. So, mum was evidently interviewed about her association with Jermaine Greer, who she didn't particularly like, I've got to say. I was pulled a book off mum's bookshelf when I was about 12 and started reading it, and mum came over and asked me what it was, and it was The Female Eunuch. I was getting quite involved in it, and mum went, that tart, when she found out what I was reading. And there is, so there's a quote in Jermaine Greer's biography rather, where mum says, Jermaine did not just menstruate, she hemorrhaged once a month and gave you a drip by drip description.
Most politicians write books about what they have done. This is not one of those books, Mr. Morrison writes. In writing this book, what was important was not what I did, but what God did for me, how he sustained and encouraged me in good times and bad, from a miracle victory to a crushing defeat, and how his faithfulness over a lifetime had prepared me for these times.
I think that he didn't actually write about his political career because he could be in some very deep doo-doo.
That he was more open about his political career than one Anthony John Abbott was to the ABC.
It's amazing how God's grace kind of didn't remind him, hey, look, robo-debt is going to, like, you know, is this a really bad idea?
Also, ministry theft.
I love it how Christian politicians are very much, God is good to me and God saved me and God guided me, but, you know, fuck the people that I was meant to be governing.
On that note, here's the thing with Scott Morrison. He is a special kind of Christian politician. He's not your mainstream Christian politician.
No, he's
a different kind. As Barnaby Joyce said, he was something slightly different when it came to his view of God. It was slightly different to everyone else. Whereas to me, it was a very private, personal thing. Tick that box. Move on. Scott Morrison, on the other hand, it was right here.
Yes. Ladies, do you want to hold on to your seats? You're going to be blown away by the next headline I'm going to share. 3, 2, 1. Liberal Party needs more women MPs. Tony Abbott. Former Prime Minister Abbott says the Liberal Party should recruit more women and ethnically diverse MPs to improve the fortunes of a party grappling with the task of reflecting modern Australia. The 20th Prime Minister urged his party to look to the UK Conservative Party, which created an A-list of female and diverse candidates without quotas, and now boasts Hindu Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and Cabinet Ministers Suella Braverman and Kemi Badenoch. Describe Abbott as robust conservatives in the most diverse cabinet in history.
Robust conservative. You mean, you know, fascists in political.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. But Clancy, yes. What would your what are your thoughts? Tell me what's going through your head as you listen to that.
Oh well, how the worm has turned. You know, it's. And I'm talking about the political worm, you know. It's like he's not having to actually harness his electorate anymore. And isn't he in the UK now? I think his current job is actually depending on him being somewhat
He has to make sure that he keeps the UK on his side.
Exactly right.
But yeah. I do find it interesting how this is exactly what the anti-wokes are rallying against. You know, it's like, we don't need more, you know, this is woke hippie crap. We don't need more women and diverse people. Rubbish.
You see, and now, what this does show is that, you know, anti-wokeness has no idea what it wants. It has no idea what it's against. let alone what it's for.
But I find it interesting how he sees the UK as like the model to replicate.
And he quoted the three most hated people in the UK. Suella Braverman in a poll was voted 10 times, I think it was 10 times, more hated than Margaret Thatcher.
That is something. That is something to be...
Because
to be,
Suella Braverman, in her thing that got her fired, she had attacked people that were homeless, living in tents, and said that she was going to criminalise people who pitched up a tent without a permit, deporting people to Rwanda. Really, such a great idea to people fleeing persecution from around the world to be deported to a country where the leaders wanted...
These following people don't need tents because they have been elected to the Tasmanian State Parliament. Looking through this list, Jackie Lambie Network have got a couple of people in. So it's mostly Liberal Party. So, for example, looking back, there's three Liberal Party, two Labour, one Greens, and one JLN. If we go to Braddon, Jeremy Rockcliffe, I think he got like three quotas just by himself. But there's three Liberal parties there, two Labour, an Independent, and a Jackie Lambie. If we go to Clark, there's Liberal, two Liberal, two Labour, two Greens, and an Independent.
Yep, that doesn't surprise me.
No.
And in fact, I voted for all of them.
including the Liberal Party people.
The Labour and the Greens. And the Independent, but not obviously the Liberal.
Do any of these names ring any bells for you, clients?
So Ella Haddad's been in the Labor Party for a long time. She's been the federal member previously.
Okay,
she's very, very hard working. I have a lot of respect for Ella because I have, as you probably noticed, a sign on my door which says no door knocking or solicitation.
Yes.
And the last state election, she must have come door knocking and saw the sign and just left me a card, and I was actually home. So I thought, I was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. So Vicar Bailey, this is the first time I've heard of him from the Greens. So he got voted in. Josh Willey's, again, been around the traps a bit in the Labor Party.
Okay, yeah.
Is quite well respected, and so is Christy Johnson. Helen Burnett, don't really know her much. Simon Baracus and Madeleine Ogilvie were both...
Ex-Labor?
No, Simon Baracus wasn't, but he was actually a local council member.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I've heard some stories about him that aren't terribly positive. He's a local businessman.
Wasn't he one of the proponents of the reforms of local government structure?
Yeah, he's a local businessman, and a friend of mine who did run for local council in Hobart, who is trans, did not have a very good relationship with him, and he has a few issues in his attitude, let me put it that way. Franklin, Rosalie Woodruff, well, she's the leader of the Tasmanian Greens. Dean Winters tipped to be the next ALP state leader.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Dave Redburn.
Jackie Petrusma, she's pretty well known. Again, Meg Brown, don't really know a lot about her. So David O'Byrne, interestingly, he's a former ALP member who was actually a leader for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he had some dirt dug against him, some text messages that were sent over a decade ago, I think it
we
was.
We mentioned this last time out, didn't we?
We did mention it last time. Mm-hmm. So as a consequence of that, he basically was put on the back bench and then made the decision to resign the party altogether and become an independent.
Yeah.
Franklin actually has three... Labors.
Yeah, his values are still very much ALP values. He's not formally in the party, but his values are still very much ALP. And Michelle O'Byrne is actually his sister. Erica Betts gone from federal, Senate to local. Not really surprised. As I mentioned, I did see Eric at the Taste of the Huon Festival a few weeks ago. And Rebecca White, Australian Labor Party former leader.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I thought I remember that name somewhere.
Yeah, so she was resigned in light of the results. Look, I actually really like Rebecca. I think she's been fighting a real uphill battle.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she was actually planning the whole point with David O'Byrne taking over was she was actually pregnant with a child and decided to resign as leader and allow David O'Byrne a go because she, you know, wanted to have some time off.
Like 20-odd days David O'Byrne was in office or something.
Yeah, and then the shit hit the fan and she retook the leadership even though she's, you know.
She was kind of like told, you're back, and she was like, oh, great.
Yeah, exactly.
So in short, the Liberal Party have won about 40% of the seats.
And the whole point of the election was because Rocky was trying to secure a majority because mm-hmm. two of his Liberal Party people had objected to some of his actions, mostly around the stadium and a couple of other things, had actually been forced to resign from the party, and they both ran also as independents. I don't think that either of them got in, which I'm not really surprised about, but he, on the back of that, was thinking that he needed a majority, but in fact that's slapped him in the face, and now he's having to make deals with the Jackie Lambie Network and the independents.
But the independents are closer to Labor than anything else, though, right?
They are. So it's definitely shot him. He shot himself in the foot, as you would say. Mm-hmm. In fact, look, it's going to be an interesting time the next few years. I mean, the fact that he called the election a whole year early as well, yep, because he thought that there was an advantage in that. That's really backfired on him. Yep. So we shall see.
We shall indeed. From my part of the world, social justice worker and community activist Les Twentyman has passed away at the age of 76. So if you're familiar with Father Bob, Les Twentyman and Father Bob were very much cut from the same cloth in that they spoke their mind. They were from a previous generation. They didn't really care too much what you think. They wanted to get the job done. And yeah, so Father Bob and Les Twentyman actually hung out a lot, or had a lot in common together, and some of their circles overlapped. But yeah, Les Twentyman unfortunately passed away from, I forget, something that killed him, a sickness. And yeah, there he is on screen, and he's done a lot of good work in the community. He was a ward of the Order of Australia medal and was a finalist for Australian of the Year in 2004 and Victorian of the Year in 2006. So yeah, he's been he's part of the fabric of Melbourne, and unfortunately he has him and Father Bob can now enjoy beer together if there is a place after life where you enjoy beer.
Isn't that called Valhalla?
Do they have beer in Valhalla? Okay, well there we go.
Beer in Valhalla at the end of the Highway to Hell.
There you go.
There we go.
Beer and mead, I believe.
We'll have to get a Norse mythology expert to clarify up. But let's jump over to the AFL because this kind of made big news. This made big news for a couple of days until Brucey's trial kind of kicked off the front page. But
it overshadowed a race, didn't it, that took place?
Sorry?
It overshadowed a sporting event that took place in Melbourne.
Yes, there was that as well. But Andrew Wilkie, God bless his soul, you know, you got to love him because he will bring these kind of issues to light. So apparently the AFL were secretly drug testing players. So I think apparently they were encouraging players to feign injury in the off chance that they had a positive drug test, so they would avoid sanctions for having a positive drug test.
Okay.
Because, of course, that's what you do, is that, you know, if you have a drug testing policy, you decide to not enforce it to the best of its ability. It's
I remember hearing something about it, and it was more along the lines of basically players who knew that they would probably test positive for mm-hmm. the drug just simply didn't turn up to play and called in sick.
Yes, and they went and saw a particular doctor to make that happen.
Because that was great in the world of professional wrestling, wasn't it? Going to see a particular doctor.
Oh, and, yes.
You know, avoiding the testing regime that they had. That was great, that was.
Yes. But it is just interesting how, so apparently a lot of these allegations come from the Melbourne Football Club, and you see here in this paragraph, egregious misconduct within the AFL provided by former Melbourne Football Club president Glenn Bartlett, former Melbourne Football Club doctors Zeeshan Arain and Sean Smith, father of... And it's just interesting that the Melbourne Football Club, one of their players has actually been charged with drug trafficking, and another player has been suspended for drug-fueled behaviour. Because he's been a bit of a naughty boy. And so...
Is it a very naughty boy? A very naughty boy?
Very naughty boy. So this is another example of maybe toxic masculinity, whatever that means, coming to the fore. And
Or is it just Australian culture?
Well, true.
Oh, I don't think it's exclusively Australian. I think this is two
pillars of Australian community.
This is the sort of thing that affects most elite sporting groups and those sorts of areas where there's high pressure and lots of money.
Yeah, and we have young kids, lots of pressure and lots of disposable income.
And basically you have this culture where young people who are sometimes not always from an affluent background and often are not, are suddenly in this situation where they're being, you know, heralded and given lots of money and taken out in the town and given free shit, which includes drugs.
And looked up to
the role models. Guess what happens?
They screw up.
Very similar to what happens in the NFL in the USA.
Or the NPL.
There's a lot of, or the English Premier League in... soccer/football, depending on what part of the world you are and calling it. It is young people being given lots of money and having lots of people that are probably not the most desirable people to hang around with now on the scene.
I do find it interesting how, like, we, on one hand, like, these people didn't ask to be role models, then when they stuff up, they're criticised for not being role models.
It's one of the reasons I despise... commercialized sport because it is damaging to these people. You know, people are like, oh, but they get paid so much money. Yeah, but
you do have some of these sports stars who are genuine role models. Lewis Hamilton, for example, is a genuine role model who genuinely does good for the world.
That's a Lewis Hamilton thing. It's not a sports thing. You know what I mean?
He's got diversity in sport things, and he's got like women in motorsport things, and he's using it for like extreme he was a member of to highlight the difficulties surrounding climate change and all this stuff. And he's
to juxtapose that, it also came out last week that this gentleman on screen, Taron Thomas, was sacked by the North Melbourne Kangaroos, banned for all of 2024 as AFL hands down strong verdict, and his crime is accusations of inappropriate behavior towards women. So he hasn't been, if I remember correctly, he hasn't been charged with anything. He's just had accusations. And
it's another one of those things that we mentioned last week. You can dredge up some text messages. You can make some claims. Yeah. You can say the person's a bully, but it just seems to be the nom de plume nowadays.
The AFL
that you just go around and you say, oh, look, I dredged up this thing that was said 35 years ago. Oh, he came up to me in this way, that way. It has cheapened what is a very serious accusation.
The AFL Pro found Thomas had engaged multiple acts of misconduct, including threatening a woman via direct messages multiple times. The Roos said they'd run out of patience with the midfielder/forward, given his string of poor behaviour and inability to buy into the club's culture. Well, yeah, but given how we know football clubs are run, is it good that he doesn't fit into the club's culture?
It's like going to university and shunning drinking culture and then getting criticised for shunning drinking culture.
Yeah, I know. From what I understand, he hasn't actually been charged. And this is the weird thing, is that the AFL will come down for accusations. I find it interesting that, like, you can, like, smack a guy in the head and, you know, make him bleed and his nose is broken and you will get 10 weeks. Okay, fair enough. You send a bad message to a woman and you're effectively sacked. Let's get a little bit more serious, and this is probably going to get a little bit dark, a little bit dark. I'll start with this. An Iranian man says he fears harm if sent home. The government says it is not enough. And so the Labor government is trying. Yes, Labor government is trying to, I suppose, appear tough or act tough in terms of immigration deportation in light of the NZYQ High Court decision. And there is actually a second High Court case that the government hopes that they don't lose. And if they do lose it, then they plan to pass legislation through the parliament to jail people who refuse to cooperate with deportation orders.
So you're going to keep them in Australia longer?
That's what I thought as well.
You're going to keep them in Australia longer. Well, you're going to get jailed because we can't deport you. So we're going to keep you here longer at our expense.
Yes. And there was also another aspect to the legislation where the Australian government were planning on issuing travel bans to people from countries that won't accept repatriated people from Australia.
Say that again.
The Australian government was planning to introduce legislation to allow it to introduce travel bans to people from countries whose governments will not accept people that the Australian government wants to repatriate. So, for example, I think Sudan and Iran and some of those other countries, if those countries do not want to accept people that Australia wants to kick out, like who Australia wants to return, the Australian government was then going to turn around and say, your tourists can't come here.
Okay. So
that's not going to stop people who are fleeing those countries turning up in Australia. They're just going to turn up. That's like cutting your nose off just to bite your face. Oh, thank you. We're not going to have a free and open society because your country's not a free and open society. What are you talking about?
I mean, there's a reason why people flee from those countries to come to Australia, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a reason why probably not many Australians would choose to go and visit those places on a tourist visa in the first place.
Whilst there may be travel bans in place, I'm not sure that's, you know, in compliance with the Australian constitution to just, you know, blanket turn around and go, this country, no. Goodbye. I'm pretty sure that would fall foul at the High Court.
Well, everyone has a right to seek asylum. This is the thing. It drives me batty that people go, oh, you know, those people can't seek asylum because they're from that country and we're going to send them back.
So
everyone has a right to seek asylum.
Just as an example.
Even Americans have a right to seek asylum.
I could go to Australia and mm-hmm. I could seek asylum.
Yes.
Exactly.
I could turn around and say, I'm fleeing persecution from the government of the United Kingdom. Give me asylum.
Exactly.
Give me asylum. So just on here, so this is from the Refugee Council of Australia. Key provisions of the bill. So the first part is to new special powers for the immigration minister. The minister may direct a person to facilitate their own removal from Australia through actions including submitting applications for travel documents, attending interviews, and providing information, which is interesting because I thought the immigration minister had a lot of power already, but it turns out no. Imprisonment
so on that one there, what that is, okay. That's a voluntary repatriation scheme.
Mm.
At the moment, you can't voluntarily repatriate yourself because some countries will require certain documentation to be in place to accept you back.
I think it's more compelled repatriation rather than forced.
I understand what you're saying, but I used to work in this area in Britain, and until they changed the law, certain mm-hmm. countries wouldn't accept people back who wanted to go back because yes. Britain hadn't turned around and done all the paperwork to let them back in. So, for example, Britain is very difficult getting exit visa stamps.
Oh, geez, okay.
Australia is the same. So when you leave, you just leave. So there's no stamp in your passport saying you have left and things like that. So it's things like that which are probably missing from the legislation because it's never been needed before because certain countries are right bastards letting people back in.
Yeah, true. Number two is imprisonment and mandatory minimums. Failure to comply with the direction can result in a criminal offence, with penalties of a mandatory minimum sentence of 12 months and up to 5 years imprisonment, and fines of up to $93,000.
How are you going to pay a $100,000 fine? How the bloody hell are you going to pay that?
And then number three, this is what I was mentioning, the visa ban. The bill allows the minister to designate certain countries as removal concern countries. This means that all people from these designated countries may be banned from coming to Australia, with some exceptions for immediate family members and those seeking resettlement. This would include people traveling for study, tourism, or business. So... yeah,
cut your nose off to spite your face.
Yeah, indeed. So, however, having said all that, where was it? Home Affairs Minister Claire O'Neill kind of got a little bit. I'm going to relaunch this tab. Got a little bit testy with the press. Here we go.
Excuse me. We're going to run an orderly press conference here. Firstly, can I pick you up on that, the use of that inflammatory word, if you don't mind me saying. Let me just quickly explain the powers. Yeah, I mean, I would just really ask you, do you really think they're doing this for a public policy reason, or do you think they're doing it for politics? Because the answer is very obvious to me. And I'd say again, this is about the national interest and the opposition seeking simply to play politics, and they should stop doing it. We've got one more question. I'm just being told here.
Addressing down to the point where she cried.
Yeah, we've got to go. We've got to wrap up.
Well, wasn't that a pleasantly run?
That was a very pleasantly run. Cut.
yep. Here we go. Peter Dutton and the Liberals could be voting to protect Australians today. They could be taking a big step in keeping the community safe, but instead they've chosen not to.
I've got a question for the two of you here. You're both hypothetical parliamentarians.
Yes.
How do you vote on this issue, Clancy, Damien?
I'm just thinking, because I think there's always a balance that you have to strike between keeping the Australian community safe, but also being a good global citizen.
I think they're both the same thing, quite personally.
Okay, I disagree. I don't think they are.
I think they're the same thing, and the fact that there's so much secret squirrel stuff going on is actually, not beneficial to either us as Australians or globally.
Okay.
I think we should all be transparent. But then I also believe that no one should have a standing army unless it's for the purpose of like the National Guard, where they go in and rescue people from floods and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So it's more of a civil service rather than a military service.
Yeah, I don't actually believe that any country in the world should have a military full stop.
But having said that, if the government has weighed up a case for asylum and found that a person fails a character test because they are a criminal, then I think those people should be removed from Australian society.
No, actually I don't, because I think that the character test itself is flawed. The problem with it is that it's assuming that anyone who has committed a crime, all right, and we're not actually defining what that crime is, mind you, okay, in their own country, and has served time for that crime, is therefore not eligible to come into our country. Now, there's a few problems with that issue. What is the crime? Is it a crime?
In some cases, murder. In some cases, sexual assault.
Hang on a second, Damien. My problem is that sometimes the crime is basically something like maybe something that's a crime in their country that they're coming from, that is actually the reason that they're seeking asylum. For instance, homosexual sex.
When it comes to criminal activity, there has to be reciprocity in the Australian legal code, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
If there's reciprocity of the offence, fine. Go wild. But if it's, for example, an Iranian woman has been jailed because she refuses to follow the dress codes and the religious police have banged her up,
mm-hmm.
maybe I'm not going to want to deport you.
No, exactly. No, but... So that's yeah. That's my first issue with it, okay? Mm-hmm. So my second issue with it is in if they have committed a crime, say it's for theft, right? Say they've committed a crime, but it was for theft. They've actually been to jail. They've served their time. But for one reason or another, they're seeking asylum in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're refused. Right. Yeah. Now, if they've served their time, they supposedly should be free and clear of that. Once that conviction's been served, why are we then refusing?
Well, if they're citizens, then they have a right to be in the country. If they're visitors, then and look, I'm going to quote John right, Howard.
So let's take another step back then. So,
okay,
if we're looking at people who have been given citizenship in Australia,
mm-hmm.
somehow the magic of citizenship purges them of all sins. Yes.
I'm not saying that at all.
Think about it. If someone comes to Australia, even as a child, as a baby, and they're not mm-hmm. technically a citizen, mm-hmm. and then they then commit a crime, mm-hmm. our government therefore feels it's justified to kick them out. Even though they've spent their entire life in Australia and we are entirely responsible for their upbringing.
Uh-huh.
That it's suddenly okay for them to be kicked out. However, if someone who's born here and uh-huh. is technically a citizen, could commit whatever crime they like and they're still entitled to stay here.
I think what we're getting into the realms of here is what is citizenship?
What is citizenship is a crock of shit.
Citizenship here. In this context, is rights and responsibilities conferred on you
mm-hmm.
by a government and rights and responsibilities retained towards you
mm-hmm.
by that government. So we'll take a very controversial country here. Israel has, and the United States for that matter, has procedures in place that if you are an Israeli citizen or you are a United States citizen, it doesn't matter. We will come and get you. Where you are on this green earth, we will try our very best to come mm-hmm. and get you back home. It doesn't matter. You could be had up for murder. You could be trying to, you know, take vials of cannabis through your luggage into Russia. We will try to come and get you.
Yep.
Whereas other countries have about as much power or government structure to go and do that. Take Yemen, for example, Somalia. These are countries that issue citizenship, but they have no meaningful way of then enforcing that citizenship.
Yeah.
And in a society where we are to have citizenship and countries, you have to, in my opinion, try to go to the American and Israeli end of things, the Somalia and the Yemen end of things, because otherwise, what purpose does citizenship hold if you as a citizen have responsibilities such as in America, men aged between 18 and 26 have to sign up for the selective service draft. Mm-hmm. Israel, you have to serve in the military if you're of a certain ethnic group, for them to then not turn around and say, okay, we require this of you, but we're going to do this for you, what's the point? It has to be a two-way street, citizenship. Government have to do things for you, you have to do things for the government. Taking Australia, for example, government have said, you are an Australian citizen, resident in Australia, you are required to vote. Therefore, Australia has to do something in reciprocity of that to justify being able to say, we're going to require this of you. Okay, that's the bargain of citizenship, in my opinion.
Okay. That's a lot to consider. And, yeah, I think Clancy and I sit at opposite ends. I was going to... yeah, I won't see the pot anymore. Let's go over to, because funny we were talking about all this, Iraq on the screen. Australian Robert Pether writes emotional letter from Iraq jail urging nation not to forget him. Mr. Pether says he feels abandoned by the government and worried he will not survive his time behind bars. Foreign Minister Penny Wong's office says the government has consistently advocated for Mr. Pether's rights and welfare.
Just another flip side of what we were just talking about. And exactly what Phoebe was saying about the responsibilities of the country to which a person is a citizen. They just briefly before they came on here, there was a new segment on ABC about with representations from several other people who've been in similar situations trying to get him released. Part of the thing is, as usual, the Liberals are like, why hasn't the Labor Party done something? Well, this actually started when the Liberals were still in power. He was jailed when that happened. Yes. So it's not like it's, you know, solely in the Labor Party's domain.
Mm-hmm. I think it was always when this happened.
Exactly.
So exactly. I suppose the question is, if we don't want other countries telling us how to treat our prisoners,
you don't have the moral authority to turn around and complain about how they treat your prisoners.
Yeah. However, I think, you know, it's the government should be making representations to get him out. And, you know, so, well, I suppose it's an interesting one because let's say, for example, Chappelle Corby, when she was in a Balinese in prison in Bali for smuggling marijuana, should the Australian government have gone and got her and brought her back to Australia before her sentence was served?
This is going to sound a really controversial thing.
Oh, no, really? Oh.
If you are a citizen of a country and you are convicted in their country, why should that country pay to bang you up? Why shouldn't you just be chucked out and be told you're going to serve that at your home country's expense? Now, off you trot.
Yeah, that would be an interesting policy. That is kind of what we're doing already, though, except that we're putting people in jail or immigration detention before sending them back.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. I think what Phoebe's hit on something. Why are we doing that? Why are we not just sending them back to their own country if they've committed a crime here and just say, hey, he's your problem, not our problem.
Yeah,
you deal with it.
There are certain concerns of human rights in certain countries, but if you can overcome those hurdles, ta-ta.
Good on you. Well, look, let's move on to probably one of the biggest talking points of the last week is Benjamin Netanyahu admits Israel Defense Force behind airstrike which killed aid workers in central Gaza. And one of those aid workers was a volunteer for World Central Kitchen, Zomi Frankom, who was killed in Gaza. Here we go. The charity said the team was traveling in a three-car convoy that included two armored vehicles and its movements had been coordinated with the Israel army. Here we go. He acknowledged that the country's forces had carried out the unintended strike on innocent people in the Gaza Strip. This happens in wartime. We are thoroughly looking into it and are in contact with the governments of the foreigners of the dead and will do everything to ensure it does not happen again. What are your respective takes, Phoebe and Clancy, on the killing of non-combatants inside a killing of non-combatants who have put themselves into a combat zone?
It's always a challenging thing in this case.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get a lot of noise around this.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get a lot of tactical terminology used on both sides.
Yep.
And it is horrendous that seven people are dead.
Yes.
It's horrendous that thousands of people are dead in this conflict that began on the 7th of October and is still going today.
Uh-huh.
It is horrendous that there are people still being held hostage.
Indeed,
and it is horrendous that they are recovering the bodies of hostages who have been tortured and murdered.
Yes.
All of that is horrendous. And yeah. that nobody is coming out of this smelling like roses. Nobody on any side here is coming out of this looking in any way better. But it has to be seen in a wider context. If you can't just focus on this issue of what's happening here. And I think that particularly Western media and Western countries focus very heavily on one individual from their country has been killed. And that is a very dangerous game to play because it shows the naked self-interest of those countries.
If your country isn't advocating for you, Phoebes, then...
But I understand that. But what you're also forgetting here is that you are wading into this conflict where thousands of Israelis have died, thousands of Palestinians have died. There are people who are still being held hostage who are Israelis who were kidnapped on the 7th of October. There are
foreign tanks citizens
rolling down the streets of Gaza and they have blown up universities. This is the definition of a clusterfuck of a place on earth at the moment.
They've also blown up hospitals, including maternity hospitals, you know, which is, again, under the UN Convention, supposed to be off limits.
But having said that, it's also a fact that that Hamas are using those hospitals, they're firing rockets from those hospitals as well. And
which
using
is
those hospitals.
Also a no-no under international law. You cannot use civilians as a shield.
Well, I was also going to say.
And you cannot target civilians either.
I was
so
also going to say.
Both sides here are to blame for violating international rules here. Palestinian Authority and Hamas are two different things, but they both want international legitimacy and international recognition. And to get that, you have to follow the international rules.
Like they both want Palestinian recognition, but one also wants to kill all the Jews.
Yes.
No, actually, that's not true, Damien. They don't want to kill all the Jews. They just want their land back.
No, Hamas actually want to get rid of the Jews as well. No, that's...
The Hamas Charter is quite explicit in its disliking of people who are of Jewish origin or who are Jewish. It's quite explicit.
Look, I mean, my personal feeling is that Israel should never have existed in the first place.
Your personal opinion is that countries shouldn't exist full stop.
Yeah.
Well, there's that question too. But I definitely don't think Israel should have been established as such. I mean, Israel already had a diverse population.
And it still
Jews.
Does. Israel has a very diverse population.
Yeah, include Jews and Christians, for that matter.
Christians, Druze, Arabs.
Yeah, yeah. And
gay people.
Just been left that way. I don't understand why Israel needs to have its own land in the first place.
Because Israel has an historic claim to the land as well.
No, it does not. That's bullshit. It's one of those stupid biblical historical cock-ups where they.
But the Jews have been in Israel for thousands of years.
They've never had a historical claim to the land.
They've been there for thousands of years.
They just made that fish up with Tanakh.
I'm gonna say this. There were Jews in the British Mandate of Palestine.
There always were Jews there, but they didn't have a claim to the land over everybody else.
I don't know about over everybody else, but they certainly had an historic right to exist.
No, they didn't. Why did they have a historic right?
By that extension, does anybody have any historic right to claim anything anywhere when it comes to land?
Not like that, no. Not when it's been shared for thousands and thousands.
Yeah. So they can share the land, but the Jews have a right to
it. They don't. They have never had a historic right to the land.
In my opinion, and this is going to be quite controversial. What I was about to say here, the Jews have a right to Israel in the same way that the Kurds have a right to the Kurdish regions.
Well,
I don't think people would disagree that the Kurds, the largest ethnic group without a homeland, have a right to actually have somewhere they can call home.
Well, that's like saying the Romani gypsies have a right to the whole of bloody Europe.
And I think this comes back to a wider issue. Getting back to the original point of
yes.
this wider issue is a lot of governments are wading into this.
Mm-hmm.
This is unacceptable. This and this and this and this and this and this. But the issue is that it's very selective by these governments. If you are to call out this airstrike, call it out. But also call out every airstrike and call out every military operation. And also on the other side, call out every time that civilians are used as human shields. Call out every time that there is a hostage who is killed or tortured. Call out every time that there are shootings towards civilians in Israel and in Gaza. Call the whole sodding lot out. Don't just get angry because a member of your citizenship died. Get angry at the whole sodding lot.
I agree there.
Yeah, to a point, I agree. Let's move on for that before we say any more controversial statements, and let's move on to another subject that we can make controversial statements about. Next year, is it next year or later this year? We're getting a new Governor General.
Later this year, we're getting a new Governor General in July. Okay, well,
yes, it is. Here we go, 1st of July. So, Anthony Albanese this week came out and announced that. Okay, what is the lady's name? Samantha Mostyn. So are we gonna have another female governor general?
Well, there you go. Gonna have another governor general who happens to be a woman. Whoop de doo. Yes. The current governor general happens to be a man. Whoop de doo.
Yeah, well, that's I suppose the interesting thing about this one is that this one has no political nor military experience. Which I think
is actually quite refreshing. I think that's quite refreshing because I think that the establishment of politics and the military can sometimes need a good bit of freshening up from someone who is a complete outsider. Completely refresh it, completely say, look, I'm looking at this differently to the way that you've always looked at it because you've always been on the quote inside of it. And I think it'll actually be quite refreshing.
Okay, here's a question for both of you, mostly for Phoebe. If the role of the Governor General is mostly ceremonial, why do we care about whether this person's an insider, an outsider, whether they're a politician?
Because they will make speeches, and in that capacity of them making speeches, they will choose the topics they make speeches on.
Oh, no. Oh, they're going to make speeches. We really need someone who isn't a politician to make speeches. That will serve Australia really well.
Will you shut up for a second, you over-the-top lunatic? Just shut up, you. But anyway, and they will select what they go and choose to focus on. But there's also a lot of behind-the-scenes things which the Governor-General does from an administrative point of view.
Such as
the office of the Governor-General itself and the representation of that office will be something that needs to be representative of a modern Australia.
Really?
And if you keep on having the same people who are military insiders, political insiders, over and over and over and over again, whilst we still have the office, it has to actually have some kind of resemblance of the people it's supposed to be representing. And it can't keep on just being the same old, over and over again if you're going to keep the bloody thing.
I agree with Phoebe. I mean, having said that, hopefully it's the next step in the process of us becoming a republic. But it's also a point to be made that it's to prevent the government being kicked out by their own Governor General, which is sort of the whole point of this podcast.
Well,
how does Gough Whitlam feel about that? How did Gough Whitlam feel about exactly. that?
Well, that's hopefully Sam Mostyn will never need to use those powers. But I suppose the question is, if the Governor General is merely a representative figurehead, then you know that's you know. Whereas if they do actually have power, then maybe we should put it to an election. Maybe we should have an election to choose our Governor General that the Queen then installs on
the will of the
people. Sorry?
It's the King now.
Oh, sorry. I'm used to...
I don't want Camilla selecting the Governor General of anywhere.
Oh, no, you want Kate choosing him instead.
We should all have Meghan do it.
That's a... Yes, but I did. This came across my as well. The Queen of Woke commentariat loses the plot over our new Governor General. Samantha Mostyn helped drive the AFLW, supported The Voice, and has a history in the ALP. Guess how the right took her appointment as Governor General?
In the same way they took Tony Abbott's. The Liberal Party must be more diverse comments. I'm sure of it. I'm absolutely sure of it.
However, I'm going to say my own controversial statement and say I kind of agree with that criticism because at work, I have a TV screen that plays ABC News. So I do listen to ABC News. I quite like ABC News. And I listened to Anthony Albanese talk about his choice for Samantha Mostyn. And it really came across as Samantha Mostyn is a really modern woman. So I don't give two hoots if she's a really modern woman. I just don't want her.
But then again, this appointment. I just want someone who is someone like you. It's more for someone like Clancy.
Then
the reason that this Governor General has been appointed and the reason that Anthony Albanese is doing the rounds is not to get support from people like yourself, Damien. It's to get support from people like Clancy because
So he's then using the Governor General as a political tool.
And so has every other Prime Minister who's ever appointed the Governor General.
Yeah, true. But having said that, it's like, well, hold on, if the Governor General is supposed to be neutral, then okay.
It cannot be, quote, neutral in its appointment because it's a political appointment.
Which you really no, well, no.
Let's put it this way.
King's
he wasn't going to appoint Scott Morrison to be the Governor General, now was it?
Oh no, that would be God like, working in his life.
It's like the president of the USA appointing Supreme Court judges
and ambassadors.
Know? Exactly, and ambassadors.
Yeah, like I don't know, just I listened to Anthony Albanese just like drone on a bit more about and look, I think yes, the
but
most
of course Anthony Albanese is going to drone on about it. He's got to sell. This
yeah, I know.
To
it's
his
just
face.
It just came across as it just really came across as a I don't want to say identity politics, but it just really came across as this will be fantastic.
He was talking to the internals of his own party.
Yeah, I think so too. But it's just like I just want someone who isn't going to appoint people to secret ministries and is gonna like just shut up. That's all I want. I don't care. I don't care what gender you are. I don't care, you know, if you're running a drug dealing ring from.
What about me becoming the Governor General? What about if I was appointed Governor General?
I'd support that. That'd be
Except that you're not Australian, so you
that can be worked out because the King can just appoint me an Australian citizen. He has that power.
Well, I
think it'd be more likely I'd get appointed as the Governor General.
Let's petition Charles to make Phoebe a citizen. But I think it's time to wrap up on a lot of rubbish.
Oh, it's just trash, this isn't it?
I know. It's Marine Safety Authority delays Sam McLennan's plan to sail a raft built of rubbish from Hobart to Sydney.
God, that rubbish, wouldn't it? Been building this thing nearly a decade he's been building this thing, isn't he?
He's been building it forever. And, like, it's quite funny because the local radio guy, Andy Gall, he interviews him probably every year to see what the progress is about. How he's going with this raft.
Yep.
So I've been following it. you know, it's very tongue-in-cheek. But, you know, good on him.
Yep.
Passion project.
And looking at the pictures project, here,
I think it's a bit rubbish there.
I think so too.
Looking at that, that doesn't look like the world's worst ship. I'd trust that more than a Clive Palmer Titanic.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yep. You've heard it here first. But what strikes me, Clancy,
at least he'll be able to keep his afloat.
Sorry. Let's.
My car is sunk.
However, Clancy,
I'm getting a sinking feeling with this story. I am getting a real sinking feeling.
Go slightly seriously, Clancy. Why does he want to sail from Hobart to Sydney when most of the time it's the other way around?
Because he can. Okay. I mean, look, the funny thing about it is, of course, you have to go one way or the other, and the people who do the Sydney to Hobart still have to sail back again at the end of it, don't they?
Oh, okay, all right.
It's nice weather at the moment for a sail. Okay.
So do we have any more water or rubbish-related puns? As long
all
as he
I
doesn't,
say is, that
is he going to go overboard with this project?
I think he needs to sail off into the sunset with this one. He does.
Well, you know, he could go to New Zealand.
New Zealand. So,
all I will say is the last time I saw someone get carried away was in an episode of Rape where a man ended up in a hot air balloon that crashed in New Zealand.
Well, we'll have to insert some puns later on then. But look, this is...
I could make a joke about them sending all their rubbish here, but then, you know...
Look, if you wanted rubbish, you should have gone to the Bruce Lerman defamation trial, because that is... There's a lot of rubbish.
But if you wanted quality storytelling, he should have gone to Lincoln Field.
Yeah. All right.
What's on for the rest of the week, ladies?
You know, WrestleMania.
Yes, but that's only Monday. That's only Sunday.
Sunday. I'm pretty sure that you and I will be talking about, you know, the outcome. We'll either be celebrating or rioting at the end of the main event.
Yeah. I'll just say this: if Roman wins, we riot.
Yes, as I said in my predictions on another podcast, and I wasn't actually on the podcast, but I did give it to the people on the podcast. I said, "Cody wins or we riot."
you're really not
making this sport any more attractive to me, you know.
I don't think we were going to ever do that. So we've.
No.
I don't think. But here's the thing, Clancy. If you want to watch men run around in their underwear with six packs and, you know, a little bit over the top, it's for you. If you don't want that, maybe not.
Well, let me put it this way. I used to live opposite the Steelers, what used to be the Steelers Stadium, which is now St. George Illawarra Stadium in Wollongong, right? In our realm. And I used to stand on the balcony of my units and boo at the team as they trained running past me.
I bet you were a barrel of fun to the team.
I was. And then I used to put complaints into the council about the noise levels on games night.
Jeez Louise.
Jeez. Well, Clancy, how's your menagerie going? How do you plan to fix that up for the rest of the week?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to see how the hormones go. But at the moment, Imriel has decided to remove himself from the household and has been hiding under the house and only coming out to feed at the front doorstep because he's just disgusted with all of us. Everyone else is fine. The blondes and the gingers are settling in fine.
A grumpy cat.
Imriel's not, yeah.
Do you have a cat there with you at the moment?
No, I shut them out because I kept yelling at me. So they're probably downstairs with Adrian now.
So he's handling the kitty cats.
Yeah.
Until next time, look after ourselves. And
let's give the old Governor General a good send-off and welcome in the new Governor General with, you know, some, let's say, the Governor General charm.
Yes, we might discuss some previous Governor General's in tight Governor's General come the time.
May God save the king, because nothing else will save the Governor General.
Especially not us. Not with Aaron Eberhard anyway.
I don't want Anthony Albanese to end up like Gough Whitlam.
In history's page, let every stage advance Australia fair. In joyful strains, then let us sing, advance Australia.